This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we have some news to start off, and then we're going to be joined by an array of different champion-level players to talk about what deck won't win Worlds. And then after that, we have some small closing remarks. Welcome to the 39th episode of Beyond the Wall. Today, we're going to talk
about... I normally get to say that.
But I jumped in. I'm faster than you today.
You certainly are. I am currently probably sounding a little bit different. I'm recording from the other side of the Atlantic. I'm recording on a different computer. Some of the editing software will be slightly different as well. The reason we wanted to do this is we wanted to be able to sum up some of the big tournaments that have happened this weekend rather than finish our recording on Friday. So the news from the weekend.
We had a tournament in China, and we had a tournament in the UK. Both were won by Baratheon, no agenda.
Which is, it's worth noting as well, because we didn't get to report on the results of Varberg Morghulis from the weekend before that, because we aired our FAQ episode a little bit early. That was also won by Baron no agenda running foul. So, any hints as to what the deck to beat is?
Baron no agenda running foul. I hear it's a very, very solid deck. So.
To be fair, I think that now that we've seen these results, we're going to see slightly more aggressive flame kissing here. I don't know if that'll be enough just to slow this deck down, but...
This deck is using Mel's Favor, Recursion, and all of Vera's good stuff, and those Brightwater Men at Arms are tough to burn. And if you discard Vera's stuff with, like, a Dragon Pit, they just get it back with Mel's Schemes. If you miss your Forgotten Plans, it's GG.
There was some other news. I got the new annals up for the new FAQ. Very minor changes, so nothing big to worry about, but just worth updating your bookmarks. Saw an announcement for the last chapter pack of the next cycle, as usual, well before we even get the first chapter pack in hand. But any cards there catch your eye?
Nothing in particular, but what did catch my eye was that Nate finally gave us approval, and we're going to be seeing him in an episode very soon.
To clarify, we're going to do this with Nate for ages. We just had to get approval from the marketing department, who has to screen the questions that that we sort of do, and we finally heard back from them. I know that they've obviously been busy with other marketing stuff.
Like Worlds, maybe?
Like Worlds, like the Thrones announcement, one can only hope. I also wanted to take a quick minute to thank two comments that we got for our episode last week. One, Johnny N. Full Effect pointed out that there's still a typo in the FAQ, and that threat from the north is restricted, threat from the north is not, which could really make that Barra deck very, very strong.
Yeah, good.
And the other one was a comment by Vizayas, who was touching on what you said, John, where people will occasionally, by accident or otherwise, have additional copies of a card in their deck. And he had said he was playing a mill deck against someone, and he milled the fourth Melisandre and the second Street of Sisters out of the person's deck, and the person just stared at them and then sort of, like, shuffled up his cards and walked away. But in that case, we're clearly attempting to manipulate the game that way. So I think it was a good thing you brought that up, John. Anything else?
No, let's get right into our episode. And it's a little bit of a special episode today because we have a whole bunch of what I would call champion-level players, people like John Burke.
Yeah,
championship players. Who have come on to tell us why a certain deck can't win Worlds.
And I want to explain a little bit why we wanted to do it in that format. I mean, lots of people are somewhat reluctant to talk about whatever deck they're going to bring, and I can understand that wholeheartedly. But here we have some players that you know have a chance at winning the game, telling you why a deck that they know very well. There you can get their meta-analysis from a slightly different perspective, and you know that they're being honest. They're not going to be playing that deck at Worlds, and they're giving you a good analysis of how the meta is in relation to some deck, probably not the one they're bringing. All
right, John. So the deck that I picked for our little segment of why a deck won't win Worlds is the one that I've been playing quite a bit and did fairly well with throughout this season, Greyjoy LIV2, House of Dreams.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun deck. We built it together and took it to Canadian Nationals, and you've been refining it ever since, basically, and doing really well in the Octagon tournament with it.
That's part of the reason why I feel like it. I know it's limitations very, very well now, and I guess like all these other decks we're talking about, this deck won't win Worlds.
And why is that?
It's got a couple of problems. First of all, people have learned how to play against it somewhat. LIV2 isn't scaring them, doesn't have the same impact on the board as it used to. But more importantly than that, I think really it's this resurgence of Bera, which is just a terrible, terrible matchup for the LIV2 for a couple of reasons. First of all, King Stan. He hits the board and you are in tears. There's very, very little you can do, even with additional targeted kill. He's just such a problem card for that deck. And then the other thing is that those Mel's Favors are really, really a hassle to deal with out of Greyjoy that tends not to be able to muster that many important characters, only these weenies.
Right, and then you add in the fact that if your opponent has a couple of nobles and throws down a Power of Blood, it can cause you a lot of problems for that deck.
Yeah, it didn't used to be as much of an issue, but that tempo play winds up being a bigger deal if you're focusing on trying to get Claim 2 or Claim 3 to continuously wipe the boards, and using any of those versions. One turn of respite for your opponent, which at the very least, every Martell No Agenda can typically buy themselves that one turn by playing Power of Blood and getting 2 to 3 challenges in on you, really, really hurts the tempo play, and then you've lost the edge and it's hard to come back. So sadly, though, Greyjoy is my favorite house. I think that House of Dreams LIV build is just not going to make it.
Well, the deck I want to talk about is Lannister Power Behind the Throne. So the reason I don't think Lannister Power Behind the Throne is going to win Worlds...
Hold on, let's list your credentials as well. You mentioned the deck that we played.
Okay.
Lannister Power Behind the Throne, for those listeners who have been living under a rock, is the deck that Darknage took to Gen Con, and he won the overall championship with that deck. He came second in the Joust, so did extremely well, but he also took it to a tournament in Montreal, a very competitive meta. He did well there as well, came first there. So he's field-tested this deck through and through.
Yeah, I played it in an earlier SC as well and took second with it. So I really enjoy the deck, and it's a lot of fun. However, I don't think it's going to win Worlds. And the main reason I don't think it's going to win Worlds is because I think people have learned to play against it again. I think some of these sleeper decks sit around for a while, and people don't experience or play test against them, and then they are kind of surprised by them in a tournament. And when you're surprised, you're not really able to think through your play and how you should open and what you should do. You tend to make some mistakes. And they're just minor mistakes, but usually your opponent can capitalize on those for an advantage. I also think that some of its worst matchups are going to be pretty prevalent at Worlds. One of the matchups that it fears a lot is actually Bera with Mel's Favor. When they take that key character on turn one, it just totally throws off the tempo of the deck, causes huge problems for it. So I think we're going to see a bunch of Bera Worlds. It causes it problems. Now, the deck has lost a little bit in the Restricted as well. Can't use Danny anymore now. Danny wasn't a major part of the deck in my mind, but it was a nice bonus. And a lot of people are playing Danny in their Targ decks, and Danny, with its high strength intrigue presence and the ability to kill key characters, can actually cause a pretty big problem for the Power Behind the Throne deck, which sometimes has problems getting enough power icons on the board.
See, I mean, I mentioned when you played this deck that I was amazed that you'd gotten that far because we had called the meta completely wrong and we were assuming that there would be a lot less Lannister and Martell than there was. Mm-hmm. In the end, DC had taken those two decks, Lanny and Martell, to the tournament, already shaping the field largely. And I think that we can expect to see those two houses again more represented than I would otherwise think, which is another reason why you don't really want to take a deck that focuses so heavily on winning intrigue challenges when the
Absolutely.
Two heaviest intrigue presence houses are still there.
And I mean, looking down the barrel of that Martell Fury with that deck can be just frightening. It's a really tough card to play around, and you have to really think it through before saying, is this the turn that they're going to play their Fury and just shaft me?
In fact, I would go so far as to say that having watched that match now on YouTube, for to your great shame, I'm sure, the final match against Corey Gulch, I would say you lost that because of the Martell Fury, even though he wasn't playing it.
I agree, because if I had known he didn't have a Fury, I would have actually opened with Fear of Winter and then probably established a very strong board presence from that point on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a tough call. All right, so that's two decks that won't win Worlds. All right, so we're joined for this little segment by probably the second best Alex in Thrones? Possibly the best Alex in Thrones?
Definitely the best Bloodthirst player in Thrones.
And the best Greek/German player in the world?
How can you be Greek/German?
Well, I'm half-half. I'm living in Munich, but I'm from Greece, and I wouldn't say the best. Recently, I really fucked up in the Greek national, so I wouldn't say that about myself.
Everyone can have an off day.
Did a different Bloodthirst deck win?
No.
Then I'm sticking with the best Bloodthirst player.
Well, I've worked on that deck a lot. So, about why it won't win Worlds, well, I think that the problem is right now that control decks such as Bloodthirst, which are really slow, just can't compete against strong and fast decks like Stark No Agenda or Lani No Agenda, all those decks which have huge setups and start pushing from the first slot. And with all those restrictions, I mean, they really destroyed the deck. I've been playing a version of it, and I also talked to Jeff and Raul from Spain, which are also really good Bloodthirst players. And, well, yeah, it's just really problematic. I mean, you need the draw from the Bloodthirst. Of course, you can get that, but you can't use the rivers, and you can't change plots as fast as you used to. So it's really hard to control. I mean, I don't know, it's just not efficient enough. That's the main problem, I would say.
Right, and I mean, Barra's kind of coming back, too. There's a resurgence of Barra, especially Barra Knights, which has a lot of renown, so it puts a lot of pressure early game. And with the rivers, they get a kind of ton of card draw. So even in late game, they may be able to match you in the card draw, which I guess would be problematic as well.
Exactly. That's the problem. And without Prince's Lands, you just don't have the recursions. I mean, I tried a version with Gaston Grey, Aegon Sill, and Great Wick, so that you can dump characters and kill two of them each phase. But alone to get it down, I mean, you need to draw the cards, you need to get the alliance plot down, and, I mean, more or less every Tier 1 deck has a lot of location control right now. So it's really hard, and you can't play favorable ground anymore because you don't have the red keep. So I really don't think that it can win Worlds this year, at least.
And I guess things like Karen Hall as well would give it trouble, being able to cancel some of those key control events.
Well, look, to be absolutely honest with you, in the beginning I thought that it would be a huge problem, but actually it's not, because you can burn through it really fast. And, I mean, you can play newly made lords and stuff. I don't think that the Tyrant Hall is the main problem. The problem is that the meta has changed to really fast and efficient decks. I mean, all those aggro decks and semi-rush decks. Bloodthirst was the strongest control deck, and its strength was that you could easily beat other control decks. But against aggro and rush decks, you always had problems. Especially now where half of the deck has been restricted.
So, I mean, at least one component of a previous version of Bloodthirst, the Westeros Bleeds, has come back. Do you have any thoughts about if there was one other component to come back, what would it need to be? Is it the Red Keep?
The Red Keep would be awesome, but I think the best thing would be if they just unrestricted it, so you could play it with rivers. If you could play it with rivers and you have that overdraw, I mean, the good thing about the deck is that in around six slots of your opponent, you would have drawn most of your deck. And then you could drop any combo you needed to win, either with a Viper or with the different combos we saw in the past 6 months with which you can win the game. So I think that the problem is that the agenda is restricted. I mean, of course, the Red Keep would be awesome. I mean, I'm trying some Hollow Hill decks with Westeros and Favorable Ground, but in Bloodthirst, it's just too slow. You don't get the components together fast enough without the river draw.
All right. And I very much doubt that there will be a change to the restricted list between Worlds and Stalic, so I'm guessing Bloodthirst won't win Stalic either?
Oh, well, I might play Bloodthirst in Stalic, so we'll see.
Ah, so what you're saying is Bloodthirst won't win Worlds because you're not there to play it.
No, just kidding. I really wanted to play Bloodthirst in Stalic, but I don't know, it doesn't work. It's no Tier 1 deck anymore, and it sad as makes me... I mean, it's fine. I mean, the deck was just broken, and people didn't like it, so even if I don't like the meta right now. I mean, I prefer control heavy metas, but, well, what can you do?
Oh, the pendulum will swing back that way. It always does.
Exactly. That's what I think.
Okay. All right, Alex, thanks for joining us, especially at such short notice.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. It's great. It's always good to have a whole bunch of top-tier players on the cast.
Thank you very much.
To continue our series about decks that won't win Worlds, we are bringing on Dave Stroms. I've referred to him previously on the cast as a wizard with Targaryen. And recently, as well as for most of this season, you were probably known best for playing a Dragon Pit.
I played a Dragon Pit deck very recently in D.C. I played it at the New York City Regional and all the way back, I think, at the New York City Star Championship. I won two of those tournaments.
And you placed very well at the other. So.
And I made top four at the other, yeah.
You know a thing or two about Dragon Pit, and I think a Targ in general.
I think that's fair.
Why won't Dragon Pit win Worlds?
Man, that's tough. Dragon Pit has a lot of good stuff going for it, but also a good deal going against it. I think it seems like it's a fairly known force in the meta right now, and I think a lot of players will tech against it. And whether that's kind of serious in-deck anti-burn tech with the King's Pavilion and things that are going to boost your strength or positive attachments to get away from things like Flamekissed, or whether it's just something as simple as maybe running the King's Law in your plot deck, I think that we will see some anti-burn and anti-shadows tech from the meta. And aside from that, I mean, a Dragon Pit deck can be a daunting deck both to build and to play. It's a slow deck in general because you have to deal with the Shadows cards. That by their nature makes the deck slower to come out than non-Shadows themed decks. So it's vulnerable in the early round, especially to kind of a rushy aggro deck, which is what a lot of the meta is looking like right now. And it's a tough deck to play kind of over and over for a long day. The tournament is broken up over the 2 days, so that helps that you're not going to have to play more than your Swiss the first day. But even by, I mean, 6, 7, 8 rounds, it could potentially go depending on how many people we have. It can get very tiring to do all that challenge math, and one mistake can set you back some.
Now, I seem to recall that one of the weaknesses of Dragon Pit historically has been anything attacking locations, in that there's generally a pretty tight gold curve that's hard once it gets messed with to keep the tempo that you need in Dragon Pit. I don't know if we're expecting a ton of location hate in general right now in the meta.
I think there's certainly some. I don't know if there's more than usual. But that, I mean, that just goes into, you know, it's a deck that's difficult to build. It's somewhat fragile. It's often very, very tight. And if you build a Dragon Pit deck that's going to suffer to a little bit of choke, you're going to run into situations where you're not going to be able to play the cards you want. So
that was a very polite way to tell me to build a better Dragon Pit.
I think that's what I got from that too, Alex. I think that so much of playing a Dragon Pit deck is kind of calling the meta yourself, that you think you're in a place where you can disrupt 3-cost characters and you can do it with minimal risk to yourself. But once people are looking out for it, it is a deck that can be disrupted by making changes that aren't severely altering what your deck is trying to do, which I think is some of the danger in running it, especially in a big event where, particularly once you're in the cut, you're going to see that counter.
Yeah, I actually, of the decks that I've sort of drafted so far for Worlds, about 2/3 of them have run the King's Law. So I definitely think that I'm keeping that deck in mind in almost all of my building. So I think you're right in that people are... I mean, what was it at the Greek Nationals that both of the finalists played Dragon Pit?
Yep.
And we've seen some other wins there, and they were the only two in the field. So I do think they know what's out there.
And there will be some at Worlds. No matter what you say here on the show, Dave, someone will bring it because it is a very solid deck.
It might even be me. Who knows?
Danny.
Danny goes a long way for that deck. She also becomes the focal point of all of your opponent's efforts to hamper what you're doing as soon as she gets the board. When I played her in the recent DC tournament, I'm not sure I triggered her all day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dragon Pit, I think John, you're right. People will try it, and I think a lot of players will keep it in mind when building themselves and kind of ask themselves, okay, I built this deck. Can it handle a Dragon Pit deck? And if the answer is no, maybe look for something else.
So it won't win because it's the elephant in the room?
It's got a lot going against it, as much as it has going for it, too.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dave, for this. And
my pleasure.
If you do bring Dragon Pit, I will be sorely disappointed.
Fair enough.
In continuing our series, we're joined by a very prominent Stark No Agenda player, Peter Wilson out of Montreal, who, if I recall correctly, you were the only Stark No Agenda making the cut at Gen Con?
As far as I'm aware, I'm the only Stark No Agenda player at Gen Con. If anyone else played that, please let me know, because I don't know of anyone else.
Yeah, you're going to have to look at the annals, and you're going to force me, aren't you? I did just double-check the stats. The next placing Stark No Agenda was 76th at Gen Con.
Okay. So I played the deck at both Canadian Nationals and at Gen Con. I made the cut in both tournaments with the deck. I would say it's probably my favorite deck of all time. Basically, anything that deck does is what I want, ideally, a Thrones deck to do. But, unfortunately, I'm of the opinion it's not going to win Worlds. I think there's two big decks that I think are good that will prevent it from winning. I'll start with the weaker of the two, in my opinion, Lannister. I think that there's a really strong Lannister deck out there. I know that it got Wheels Within Wheels restricted recently, but I was always of the opinion that that card was, although a nice bonus, totally not necessary for that deck. It was strong on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the Neil events and such, it really takes a toll on Stark No Agenda. It even has Iron Throne for what I consider Stark No Agenda's best draw source, Samwell Tarly, to be. Especially now with the recent restriction of Bran, the Rivers build really isn't what it used to be. So it's probably
even more critical to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Lannister, I think, is a very strong deck right now. And also, I think traditionally, Lannister has been very popular at big tournaments. And the second deck that I think, and I'm not necessarily think these two are the strongest decks overall, but these are just two that would cause the biggest problems for Stark. The other deck is obviously Targaryen. I just say Targaryen because there's so many builds of Targaryen right now that are viable.
You might as well just call it Targaryen Dany.
Yeah, Targaryen Dany optimization, I guess. Just getting as much value out of Dany as possible. There's so many things they could do with Dany. It even has options to get rid of lots of small characters, like with Threat from the North, to deal with like a potential Harrenhal-type deck out of Stark.
And Flamekissed is always...
And that was exactly the next thing I was going to mention, is that it also has tons of things that it could do that aren't even affected by Harrenhal out of other houses. Like, for example, Flamekissed. It's just such a strong house right now.
What do you think makes Stark more vulnerable to Targ than other houses in general?
Sure. Stark, what it relies on is combat. It needs to get the board early, in my opinion, for it to really hold on to the game. Like, once you're far behind in Stark, it's kind of hard to come back. What Targaryen does best of all is combat tricks. It'll take the board and make it into something totally different. You weren't prepared for it. And with the use of stuff like Ambush, obviously, and also Burn. So I guess I'll say that if there's any deck at a Stark that I think could do well, it's some version of the Grand Theft Location.
Yeah, which is not the version that's recently been popular.
It's not the version that's recently been popular, and I also don't find it's the strongest version of Stark in general. So it'll do a bit better against the bad Stark matchups, but in general, I find it won't do as well against something like, let's say, Baratheon or Greyjoy. So, yeah, I'd say I don't think anyone else would be as happy as I would be if Stark won Worlds, Stark No Agenda specifically, but I don't think it's going to happen.
All right. So we'll be extremely disappointed in you when you show up with Stark No Agenda desperately trying to win?
Look, it's not beyond the realm of possibility.
Thank you very much for joining me, especially at such short notice. Joining us now is two-time world champion John Bruno. You've seen his name and his face having horrible things done to it on both First Snow of Winter and the new Aerys Targaryen. So we figured that you are pretty much the king of Hollow Hill. And, well, first of all, do you think it's going to win Gen Con?
No. So I don't think that a Hollow Hill deck can win a Worlds this year, mostly because the fact that John played Power Behind the Throne at Gen Con and did so well with it. I mean, a lot of people have been playing different versions of Power Behind the Throne for a while, but there's a lot of good aggro decks right now. And I think that Hollow Hill is off to too bad of a start in those games. I played Hollow Hill at the third regional I played this year, and I was actually the number one seed going into the top eight. But I lost in the round of four to Sandy Barnabas, and he was playing the Martell Baratheon deck, which is also a very fast deck, you know? Those decks they get out quick. They can win second or third turn. And because if you don't get your cards right away, and especially since you're already behind in draw, just the number of cards you've seen, it's really easy to fall behind and not catch up. And even more so with the Power Behind the Throne deck, because if they start off first turn with Fear of Winter, you get one card. It's going to be very difficult to wipe a board first turn with one card and not give up two entry challenges. Now you're down you went from nine cards in your hand. If you played one, you're at eight. You're at four cards. You're already behind. And there's a good chance you're done in that game in a turn or two. So I think Hollow Hill is really, really behind the eight ball right now just because aggro decks are so big.
Do you think Harrenhal affected that as well because they're able to cancel some of those sweeping effects?
Sure. If I was, let's just say, you know, my opponent doesn't play Fear of Winter first turn, and I'm able to put out, and I just see a threat with all these little weenies out there. I mean, first turn, I obviously could play First Snow of Winter to get rid of weenies. I could play Threat from the North to get rid of weenies. And if I got Threat from the North with a Hatchling's Feast, but they flopped to Harrenhal, my Hatchling's Feast as a restricted card is just totally screwed now because they're going to, of course, give up one of their worst characters just to cancel my Hatchling's Feast. It ends up being a Harrenhal versus Harrenhal battle, and there's not much you can do about that.
Well, especially when you're four or five cards behind to start with from the setup.
Absolutely.
You can't compete with Harrenhal, yeah. So I know that Hollow Hill has also been a place where people have played some more unconventional decks, things like Greg's Greyjoy Hollow Hill last year at Worlds or that kind of thing. Do you think that those are possible out of either other houses or Targ, or do you think that this is just not a year for Hollow Hill?
I still think that if a Hollow Hill deck was going to do well, one of the things we have, and, you know, John, you guys saw there at Gen Con, too. You guys had almost 120 players at Gen Con. I'm expecting more than that at Worlds. Just say 150. In a field of 150, truly, the best player is not going to win Gen Con. I mean, win Worlds. It may be. But
I know. I wasn't planning on winning. I'm going to drop one.
Yeah.
Cut.
There you go. But, no, the truth is that the deck sometimes is a lot of matchups. Because our game, which is awesome, because truly, I mean, and John mentioned this before, I feel like I can find one top tier one deck for every single house. And so any deck could do really well. And let's say you have a Power Behind the Throne deck and you match up against another Power Behind the Throne deck, those decks are, while they are dominating and can really wreck somebody apart, they're also a kind that mirror match, somebody's getting screwed. Mm-hmm. And somebody is benefiting off of somebody else's agenda, you know. And if you're even just playing like a Lannister No Agenda, which I expect to see abundance of Lannister Power Behind the Throne and Lannister No Agenda at Worlds, that those Neil decks do really well against some of those aggro decks. So those decks are in trouble too. So anyway, where I'm going with all that is a Hollow Hill deck could win, you know, whatever house it is, because it still depends who it matches up against. If it never plays a Power Behind the Throne deck or a heavy aggro deck, it will do well. But you know, you can't control who you're going to play all the time. Sure, the top players should still make the cut and be up there, but it's not always going to happen. I mean, there's going to be some really good players not make the cut just because of who they matched up against. The Hollow Hill decks, I think, that are the two best right now, I still think there's a Targ Hollow Hill that's really good. You know, like I said, I've been playing a version of it, and you really have to play. It has to be your plots matter so much. You can't just go with the
the shitty river plots and play those for cards, because that's not enough. It's too slow for you. You have to actually really play plots that do things, because if you don't, you're screwed. And the other one, I think, is Barrow Hollow Hill, just because you can play Mel's Favor. And if they happen to do Fear of Winter first turn or anything big, and you get to steal that character first turn, it also stops a lot of their challenges. You know, maybe they won't do military that turn.
Lannister Power Behind the Throne loses to anything with Mel's Favor.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's horrible. Like,
it is. It is. Yeah. And I expect to see a lot of Barrow with Mel's Favor out there, because Mel's Favor truly is one of the best cards in the game.
I think Mel's Favor is the threat card of the current meta.
Is there going to be a Barrow without Mel's Favor?
If you're Mel's Favor, you've lost. You can't win if you haven't taken into account Mel's Favor.
Yep. And then you throw that with Harrenhal, and it's like, okay.
So, we don't have too much to go through for these closing comments. There are three big tournaments. None of them are this coming weekend. They're all the weekend after, which is one hell of a weekend.
We got Betrayal at the Wall, we got Worlds, and the Open de Paris.
Which apparently is a prize there. They decided that they were going to enter your name into the white book. I think they've been doing this for a couple of years. So, and then you get to keep the white book until the next year, where it needs to be passed on to the next Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. But the Betrayal at the Wall event is in Newcastle in the UK. The Open de Paris is in Paris. And Worlds is in Roseville, well, Minnesota. Which one of those will you be at?
I'm going to be at Worlds. How about yourself?
And if people want to meet up with us, I think on Wednesday night we'll be at Joe Sensor's.
Yeah, we're going to be there late, though. We'll probably get there 10:30, 11, and we'll probably stay just for an hour and a half or something, since we do want to wake up for the Melee, because that's an important tournament.
Yep.
We get to build a Melee deck.
Do you want deck choices?
No, I haven't built a Melee deck yet.
I haven't built a Melee deck yet. It'll come. But I think I'm locked in for my jousts, so I've got a fun little...
We're playing the same thing, Alex. You can tell everyone. It's okay. They're not surprised.
Yeah, but for once, the janky idea came from me, not from you.
This is true. This is an Alex Hine jank, so...
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.